Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Craft of the Draft podcast. A huge week of footy. And we're going to take this episode a little bit differently. Usually, you know, week by week, we'll go through game by game on the boys and girls side. And it usually works. But now with a lot of key players back, we thought the best way to go about this episode is talk about some key talking points almost and discussion points out of these games. So instead of giving, you know, who had the most touches and all that for the games, we're going to give key talking points. As obviously we don't get to watch all the games in a talent league week as there's two of us and about 14 games. So it just doesn't work. But we have watched quite a few games over the weekend. We're going to start with the boys. We'll go to the girls. Got a few things to talk about from state league performances, and then the under 17 girls futures list was announced. So we'll quickly run through that and then give our tips for the final normal season round of talent league. But let's kick it off. Sandy beat Geelong pretty convincingly. I said in my tips last week, I thought that was going to happen. I just think the talent there, it's just unbelievably, they're so deep. It runs really deep. But first main talking point was Luke Traynor coming back into that Sandy side. Pretty seamless. His defensive attributes just shine like that, and he feels like with him, they're unstoppable almost.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because so our first talking point is talking about Luke Traynor's man-on-man defending, and you talk about his defensive aptitude. It's probably the one criticism I've heard of, particularly his game on the weekend, is that man-on-man defending and whether he's accountable enough with his man or whether he's too willing to peel off, try and take the intercept mark and try and really set up some rebound slingshotting play. So from my perspective, it's probably something where he could be a little bit more accountable, and certainly an area, I don't want to say an area of improvement. We've seen he can do it against Tyler Welsh, but we're probably going to see him another three or four times at least this season. We expect Sandy to go quite deep in finals, so I'd like to see him be really accountable, win some one-on-ones, and then be able to rebound from there, because we know he's got that intercepting ability. We know he's got that aerial presence as well. We know how good his kicking is at its best. It was probably a little bit below its best, to be fair, on the weekend, but that man-on-man defending is probably that one more layer of his game this year that we haven't quite seen with as great an emphasis as we have some other areas.
Well, I'll throw another question back to you in terms of, is that really his role to be a strict one-on-one defender? Because obviously his best work comes from that intercepting capability, and I'd agree his disposal and his general performance wasn't as high as previous games, but I still think that impact with his rebound and his intercept can almost at least in Sandy, he's got other players that do that role for him of one-on-one, and they're pretty strict in that sense. So does he need to actually properly showcase he's got that ability, or is at the next level, is that something that's not really going to be his main focus anyway?
Yeah, it's an interesting point. I guess what I would say is he has clearly found a home for himself down back, and if you're in the back seven, your first role should be to defend before you do come off and try and set the game up from an offensive standpoint. So I do still think that grounding as a defender is really important, and like we say, we know that he's definitely got it, and we've seen it, but probably a little bit more spasmodically than we would like and would love to see it, particularly this weekend against Oakley. Not sure which matchup he's going to get, but they've got some real firepower up there.
Yeah, certainly do. Move to the next talking point, which is about, I guess, the players that are under the radar in that Sandy team, because obviously they're stacked with top 30 talent in there, but you've got those boys that are pushing for probably your late third or fourth round picks. I'll let you lead this conversation. Touch on the players you want to, but I struggle to think of an answer to this, I said to you, but what do these players have to do, like a Charlie Rosines, for example? What do they got to do to push themselves further up the boards come the end of the year? Because what's there, you know, probably three or four games left.
Yeah, so those sort of players that have played schoolboys all year and they're coming back in and it's stacked where they don't necessarily have that opportunity to really shine, and they've missed out on the national championships as well. So probably coming from a little bit further back. And I think when I think of those sort of players, I think they need to have real X factor and some real offensive dynamism and speed and athleticism. And I think that needs to be on show for all to see. And they've got games to show it. Like we say, we expect Sandy to play three or four finals, but at the size of someone like a Charlie Rosines, and there's so many of those 180 to 183 centimetre players. I think Charlie Rosines is a little bit smaller than that, but there's a lot of those sort of players in this draft class that I think it's really important that you're not just a role player that plays as a high half forward because you can't quite crack into the midfield and you're trying to sort of get your licks of the ice cream around the sort of periphery of the contest. You're actually trying to show something, kicking some goals, setting up some goals, and playing with some real creativity and flair at the back end of this season. And you've also got to play to structure as well. Rob Harding, their coach, gives them a really strong structure. He's an excellent coach. So I think, yeah, you base your game there, and then hopefully from there, if you've got the talent that can shine, because they do get enough looks up forward, Sandy, so there's enough opportunity for the offensive players to really shine.
I'll just bring him in quickly, Bailey McKenzie. I just want to touch on his game, given it feels weird if we don't. But he's one that could fall into that. He probably was in this category before this game started, as one that probably needed to show just that little bit more. His Metro series was okay without being great, right? Yeah. Is someone like Bailey McKenzie what you see as that? That's the fundamentals of what you got to do to build yourself up. You know, he's the way he played on Sunday was terrific. The separation he got, his marking capacity, is that the X factor you talk about that he was able to show at least?
Yeah, exactly. And I think the good thing that he was able to do was we knew what he could do at the start of the season. And obviously, like you said, he got a couple of games for Vic Metro as well. But I thought it was a really well-rounded game, and we were able to see different elements of his skill set. Like, he was quite clean below his knees. His forward craft was really good. And at the size that he is, he's a third forward. He's not a key forward, but everyone's probably seen his marking to start the season. We know what he did against GWS. That was built off what he was able to do in the 7 goals that he kicked. So, yeah, I think another thing is probably showing something a little bit different, showing that you've really progressed from those first few rounds of the season, because it can be quite easy to plateau, or it can be difficult to make the jump up from APS or AGSV footy. And, yeah, the players that are able to make that leap are the ones that are going to be well positioned in the back portion of the year.
Last talking point from this game before we transition into the second game of that doubleheader, which was Oakley GWV. But if you go to the stats, which most people do, you see Levi Ashcroft 46, you see Murphy Reid 39. It didn't feel like that on the day, did it? Although it did feel like they were racking it up, but not to that extent of a 46. And Levi kind of matches Will's, you know, 51 from a couple of years ago. So I don't know. What did you think about their games? Murphy Reid, both of them started really, not poorly, but very kind of off their game. Something felt off to start, but then that just ticked over. I was questioning Murphy Reid if he was even at, like, he was going fully at it, which sounds like a dumb statement, but when you have that much class, you're at the back end of the year, you don't want to injure yourself going into finals. It felt like he was even going half pace, but he was still elite.
Yeah, I didn't get that sense of Murphy Reid. I thought Murphy Reid was absolutely terrific. I thought he was comfortably the best on ground with the skill set we've seen from him all year. From Levi Ashcroft, to me it felt like a 25-28 touch game. And I know there were some other people at the game that sort of thought the same thing. It was like, wow, how did he end up with 46? Is this a glitch in the Matrix or something like that? But, I didn't think it was overly impactful with his disposal. He's a very smart footballer, and he's got so many weapons that we've discussed at length this year, but it felt like an accumulator game to me. The tag accumulator has obviously got negative connotations about it now. Well, you want to see players be able to really hurt and slice teams open with their disposal. It felt like there was a lot of disposal with him where it was uncontested mark, kick. You're not really advancing the ball. You're not really generating scoring opportunities. Yes, he did win his fair share of contested ball, and that's something that was noteworthy, as he always does, and won some clearances as well. He's clean, but it did feel like, compared to Murphy Reid, who got 39 disposals, he was a little bit less impactful, and Jagger Smith as well got the 42 disposals, and I thought Jagger was particularly influential.
Before we move on, let's just touch, since we were at that game, shout outs to Lockie Jake, Xavier Vasich, and Noah Tulio. Falcons boys all performed really well and slotted back. I mean, they've been playing most of the year anyway, but against the top side, all three stood up. But we'll move now to the Oakley Rebels game. And, Jagger's the main one that we kind of transition on from Levi having 42. And, he was unbelievable, because the questions have been, how damaging is he with the ball in hand? Yeah. I think that experience at VFL level has really helped his game. He seems a lot more aggressive now and willing to take on, not that he's ever been shy of physicality. He takes it on. Yeah, he's always been courageous. But it was his scoreboard presence early where he was able to impact scores inside 50, finding space out of nowhere. That's just the way he does things, and his delivery inside 50, the way he extracts the footy out of contests, I find fascinating, given he barely has to put himself in a contest, but he just takes it out and he's got space ahead of him. But was that okay? If you have to compare all three of those players we just talked about,
yeah,
Where would you have him in that ranking?
I would have Jagger Smith at number one. Yeah. I would have Murphy Reed at number two, and then I'd have Levi Ashcroft at number three. Yeah, I think the one other thing I'd add to Jagger Smith is it just felt like every time there was a stoppage around the ground, it was a reasonably open game as well, but every time there was a stoppage, he was there. And, yeah, his work rate was absolutely immense. And, yeah, he looks really ready to make that transition. He might only have two games left with Oakley before he is on an AFL list. And, yeah, boy, it's going to be a lot of fun to watch how the journey unfolds. Another talking point to come out of that game, I think, was one that you noted. So I want you to lead this conversation. Jonty Falls one-on-one work. It's not something I've necessarily been critical of in the past. I see him as a player that's got a lot of upside and scope, but it was something on the day that he was blanketed by Liam Callaghan. Liam Callaghan, a player who trialed for Vic Metro and is a very handy defender in his own right. But he isn't one of the top three or four in the draft. So you would have gone into that hoping that Jonty Fall was going to be able to beat him, and he wasn't able to do that. And a lot of that came down to Liam Callaghan being able to lay a fist into balls that came into him one-on-one. Tell us about how you see Jonty Fall's one-on-one work. I also want to note that Luca Grego had a role in him in the Vic Metro versus Vic Country game, and Luca Grego, completely undersized against Jonty Fall, was able to neutralize him aerially as well at times. So, yeah, there's certainly something to the discussion.
Well, I've always been a big fan of Jonty's game. Like, I love watching him from the back end of last year, so I've kept a very keen eye on him. And his marking has always been that. It's been that part of his game that will always take him through his journey. And watching him the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks, last two games against Gippy, we played on Harry Canning for a majority of that game.
Again, a very good player, probably gets a VFL contract, isn't viewed as probably in that AFL circles at the moment.
But when he's locked down one-on-one, so I say this where the ball comes in, his opponent has him right there next to him. So he's got no separation. He's had no opportunity to get separation before the ball's come in. He's been struggling. He hasn't been able to really impose himself in marking contests, which I've found. And it's been a limitation to GWV, especially going inside 50, because they're not dependent on him at all. You've got the likes of Charlie McKinnon, who have obviously proven, you know, he's proven himself in the last couple of weeks that he's a genuine talking point of next year. But I just don't think he's making as much impact one-on-one, where as soon as he gets separation, unstoppable. Mm. He pushes up the ground, he'll take contested marks. I just wonder if it's all – when you compare him to someone like a Jobe Shanahan, it feels like his game's pretty well-rounded. He's not – he's proven he can get that separation, but he can also challenge himself airily one-on-one and battle through his opponent. And we saw that at VFL level a couple times. He had two-on-ones where he was able to out-strength. I'm just not sure if Jonty's game has evolved enough at this point where he's able to prove himself in those one-on-one abilities. I don't think it's a really – it's a massive red flag. I just – wonder if it's going to affect where he goes in the end, because I do think at senior level that's something you have to be able to do. I mean, that is a major part of forward craft, your one-on-one.
So in short, would you say he's a key forward at the next level, or is he more of a third forward given that question around whether he can stand up and take a massive contested mark?
I'd almost lean towards a third forward at the moment.
And he's the one thing I'd say in his advantage as well, he's very good when the ball hits the ground. He's deceptively mobile. But one more at you with no notice. I think all these players are exactly the same height. James Barrett, Jobe Shanahan, Harry Armstrong and Jonty Fall rate their contested marking.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I'd have to have Harry Armstrong at one.
Yeah.
And he showed that again against Geelong.
Yeah.
To rate Barrett is a bit unfair, because I don't think I've watched him as much as I've watched the other two.
Yeah.
I'd have Fall above Barrett, but not that. It's an unfair adjudication then. I want to add one talking point. I'll make it quick, but I have to. Ollie Hannaford, 5 goals. I just need to back up that last game against Gippy. I was like, yeah, wow, that's some type of breakout game. He almost won up that with 5 goals. It was unbelievable. The question is, and I just need a quick answer and we'll move on, has he become a draft lock?
No. No, he hasn't. And I just think his size really affects him, because when you're sub 180, there's always going to be question marks. And I don't think the performance on the weekend showed anything we didn't already know he could do. It just put it all together in one really nice game with a nice bow. And obviously he's done it for a couple of weeks in a row. If he keeps producing good footy, that's all he can really do, isn't it? But one back at you. What's his position at AFL level, Ollie Hannafin?
I'd still sit him at half forward. I think his role there, he can push into the midfield, not in the stoppages, but he rolls up pretty well. It's just that pressure is unreal. Like, I don't think you can... I couldn't actually give you a comparison of anyone in the talent league that matches him this year, I don't think.
For it's defensive just work, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. He's very tenacious. I'd put James Barrett at the top. I'd follow him with Harry Armstrong and then Joe Shanahan and Jonty Fall from my point of view. And then the last talking point to come out of this game was Floyd Burmeister. It's probably the best game I've seen him play. I know he played a really eye-catching game, I think, in a practice match against Geelong right at the start of the year, and he's had a couple of other nice performances. But with Flynn Penry back in the lineup for GWV, they were playing alongside each other. It freed up Floyd Burmeister to spend a lot more time inside 50, and I thought he looked a lot more comfortable there, and I probably see him being a key forward at the next level. He didn't get as many marks, or he wasn't credited with as many marks as it felt like he took on the day, but he certainly was able to impose himself aerially, and when he gets a run and jump at the ball, he's hard to stop. He's athletic and he's quick as well. That athletic profile is certainly going to suit him. He's got a national combine invite, and I think he showed why with his performance on the weekend. It was one he really needed to have.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I've always been on the fence with Floyd purely because I think at times his size is very... It's a bit flimsy looking sometimes, the way he attacks it, but I feel like he hasn't been winning it enough usually. He just impacts, mark impacts. But I thought on the weekend he was great. I mean, his body work was terrific. He was able to impact a lot of marking contests more than usual and hit the scoreboard as well. I think he's really pushing his case pretty well. And it's a good segue to a game I watched where Dandy beat Calder. Calder probably should have won this. They were probably on top for three quarters, but Dandy started 5-0, and it pretty much did the job when Calder ran out of gas in the fourth quarter and they ran over the top of them. But Jordan Doherty's similar, 19 years old, so obviously has that against him, not, you know, lightly. That's a against him being...
In inverted commas.
Yes. But he was awesome. Like, I love the way he attacked every marking pack. I mean, he took a Leo Barry type mark in defensive 50 over a couple... It was his contested marking. He was just so willing and aggressive. And we talk about his general mobility as a ruck. I don't even think that was the main part of his game on the weekend. It was that ability to go inside 50, to go in defensive 50, and really be there as an asset, not just someone to crash a pack. He was there to seriously impact every contest that he was around. I was seriously impressed with the way he went about it. And the question is he a smoky as a top ager to go in this draft?
Yeah, I think absolutely he is. I don't think he has been credited with what he's been able to do. Dandenong's probably the team, their boys, that I've watched more than any other team this year, so I've seen a fair bit of him. I'm really glad you talked about him able to take contested marks in defensive 50. I think that's a really underrated skill. Darcy Cameron is having a breakout year for Collingwood, and that's built off the back of his ability to get back, provide that outnumber with his work rate, to get into defensive 50 and then take that mark from that high ball coming in. And I think that's an area of a game, if you're going to play in the ruck, that can really set you apart and shows his work rate. He covers the ground like not many players, and when the ball's in his hand, you back him to do things you wouldn't usually back a ruck to do. With rucks, you sort of think, take the easy option, don't take the 45 kick, it's not your go, you're there to impose yourself physically. But he's one who, I've really liked this season because of how hard he is to track down with the ball in his hand. The phrase a fourth midfielder for a ruck is thrown around a little bit too commonly, I think, but I think it's absolutely true with Jordan Doherty because of how dexterous he is with ball in hand. However, having said all of that, I do think he's a forward at the next level. He kicked the two match-winning goals, I think, Nathan. For Dandenong, stood up when the game was on the line, and I do think he's a key forward at the next level that pinch hits in the ruck more than the other way around.
It's interesting because it wasn't even like his young gun series was poor by any means. Obviously played along the ruck. So he's an interesting watch going into the back end of the year. And the other talking point is Cooper Duff Tytler, who I haven't watched since all the way back it was just last year, in the under-16s Metro Country game. But I was blown away with his talent. For his size, I mean, he impacts in the ruck, but it was his forward craft as well that I was super impressed with. His marking capacity, he finished with 30 touches, and I I was blown away when you sent that to me because I don't feel like he had it that much. It was just every touch felt so useful, and he did help to change the game for Calder when they were getting things back into it. It's his kicking capacity as well. Finding targets loose inside 50. He doesn't kick it really clunky like, you know, some rucks can at times. He was so clean. He was clean above his head as well in pressure, you know, when he was in contests where pressure comes around him. He gets his hands up really well. He's not fazed by incoming pressure, and he gets it off really well to ensure transition keeps moving. Like, he's always aware of what's around him and how the game is moving, and ended up with two goals as well. I was super impressed, and it made me question, is he a potential number one pick? Because we've got Dersmers, we've got Ludewijk, McGuan's in that conversation. Where do you reckon he ranks, you know, in this discussion at the moment?
Well, I think the first thing we have to note is he's got a choice to make between footy and basketball. So if he chooses basketball, then it doesn't matter how any AFL recruiter sees him. But yeah, I think he is absolutely in the conversation. I watched him last week in the under-17s game. I thought he was one of the standouts. He played up forward. And that last quarter he played in that under-17s game, it sounds like he translated that into the Dandenong Calder game. His ability to take contested marks, not just take contested marks when the ball's coming inside 50, but also take contested marks to lock the ball inside 50, I thought was really impressive. And his follow-up at ground level is absolutely outstanding. So, 199 centimetres and 30 disposals, 17 hit-outs and two goals is an absolutely sterling display. And I think the other thing to note in this conversation is some of the players that have been discussed as potential number one picks haven't necessarily produced as big a bottom age season as perhaps we expected coming into the year. I think Archie Ludewijk's been pretty strong, but he's obviously been punctuated by school footy. He hasn't had a full season. Yeah. Neither has Cooper Duff Tytler, to be fair. But yes, I would say he's definitely in the conversation, would be my short answer with the attributes that he does have.
Bendigo and Tassie, you watch this game, not so pretty. It's 10 in a row for Bendigo, and not for wins, it's losses for them. Tassie got the job done, 93-22. A few talking points, and there's kind of one that relates back to Sandy Geelong, but it was profiling the future stars in your eyes, and that was Lucas Wooton for Tassie. Tell me about his game, and then obviously we'll talk about Darcy Harrington from Geelong. I guess you can just talk about him at the same time, but tell me about Lucas, first of all. What made his game that special? Saw he did pretty well with, 25 touches in the mid for Tassie.
Yeah, and it felt like more than that. I think when Tassie were really setting the game up in the first half, he was the one that really propelled them forward. As a bottom ager that's clearly going to be a midfielder when they do become a top ager, I think you can sort of be caught, I said it before, but you can sort of be caught on the periphery. You're a half forward or a half back. You have to learn that craft and be accepting of that for a few games before you get into the midfield. Well, Saturday was the day where he got his midfield minutes for the most extended time he probably has so far in his Coates League career for the Tassie Devils. And yeah, absolutely super clean, really clinical with his disposal. He was powerful, won plenty of clearances and made the right decisions as well under some pressure. So showed he had absolutely no problems whatsoever adapting to the pace of the game and the physicality of the contest. So I thought it was an outstanding performance. And I think what he's got is a perfect skill set for the modern day midfielder. And I'm looking forward to seeing how that unfolds in the next 18 months. I expect he'll be a massive part of the Allies midfield next year. And Darcy Harrington, I thought it's a little bit of a breakout game from him as well. Like, a great story, a player from the Geelong Falcons who missed Vic Country, surprisingly, from I think people down at Geelong Falcons. And he's only 15, doesn't turn 16 till November. So he's exceptionally young. Comfortably the youngest player that took the field against Sandy, and 15 disposals and two goals, and he played as a midfielder. The numbers don't jump off the page. The repeat efforts really did jump off the page, and his willingness to put his body on the line to get midfield minutes when you're that young, I think speaks to how highly they regard him and how well he is able to stand up to the pace of the game, and he certainly did that as a double bottom major, so I wanted to certainly keep an eye on.
Last talking point from this game that you watched, and then we're just going to quickly run through the other results and top performers, but Archer Day Wicks is one that we've been, I reckon, critical of throughout the year. We've got a vested interest in him. He's been a terrific player to watch over the journey, but has he really rounded off his game at this point of the season? And I guess, has he built himself into great form
Yeah, it feels like it. Yeah,
last couple of games.
I think the last three games, I was interested because I was having a think about this obviously yesterday, and it's not something I've necessarily noticed, but it does speak to a harder edge that he's added to his game. He's averaged 6 tackles in the last three games. Before that, he'd only averaged 2.5 tackles. Yep. And I think that shows that, yeah, his hunt for the contest, his willingness to go in and win the hard ball is something that I've really noticed. And it started with a wet weather game against Northern where I saw some highlights that baseline footy post and I was like, geez, that's Archer Day Weeks. There's certain elements of his skill set in terms of toughness and that sort of thing that I'm not used to seeing from him. You sort of think of him as that X factor player who produces highlights and he is really eye-catching and entertaining. But in terms of having that contested capacity as well, I think that's something that we've seen from him a lot more extensively in recent times. And with the power that he does possess and that ability to turn a game in 10 minutes and really impact with his disposal, I think you add that with the contested stuff that we've seen and you've got a player that isn't just going to sort of fall in and out of games when it's there to be won or when the game's on his team's terms, but he can actually be the player that goes in. And I've compared him to Jake Stringer before with the ability to win contested ball and do what he did on the weekend and has done in the last 3 weeks. I think that comparison starts to have a little bit more legs. And he has been absolutely terrific and has been down to his appetite for the contest. I think there was one moment in particular I want to just quickly highlight. It was in the first quarter and he stood up in a tackle and he had no right to do this, and he found Dayton Urata 20 metres away. It felt for all money he was going to get pinned holding the ball, but he was absolutely composed while he was getting tackled and, was able to find a target. And, yeah, his physicality and ability to do that sort of stuff absolutely has risen to another level, and that's been really impressive to see.
Gippy and Northern was a stunning end, and I just turned on this last couple of minutes on our phone, and I missed this goal that you said was amazing right at the end. But Gippy got the job done 95-86, but they were down by 3 points with 4 minutes left, so they kicked the last two goals of the game. Alex Taru with 3 goals, Will Malady 3 goals again, so he's been producing some good efforts as a double bottom major. Jesse Dottoli and Liam Farrett as well with 3 goals each. Max Stobey, top performer for Gippy with 2 goals and 30 touches. Zach Johnson, 24 and a goal. Lucas McInerney, 1 goal, 3 and 20 touches.
Gippy really big on what Max Stobey's able to offer in the midfield. They obviously don't have the big names necessarily in there that are going to get drafted other than Xavier Lindsay, but when he comes in, he adds a really aggressive bite to that midfield.
Murray got the job done pretty comfortably. Well, it wasn't comfortably at halftime. They're up by 5 against Western, but ended up winning by 94, 16 goals to 2 in the second half. Goal kickers fest for Murray with Josh Murphy kicking 6, Jack Whitlock 5, Matt Whitlock 4, Alex Swinnerton 3 goals, Ollie Warburton with 30 touches, Tom McGuan and Tom Burden complement each other very well, 28 and 26, Massimo Razzo with a goal and 23 touches. Last game. Oh, no, that's all.
That's the wrap, yeah. So, but moving on to the girls' game now, and you watched some of the Oakley-Sandy game, and the result was probably a bit of a fait accompli before the match started, but Emma McDonald played down back, showed a little bit of versatility. How'd she go, and what'd you make of the positional flick?
Yeah, it was interesting. I understand why they did it, because it was probably a game they knew they were going to win, even at not going full pace. They were just too good, Oakley. But she was really proficient. It just felt like a game that was simply translated into the back half. Her marking capacity was the exact same. The way she read the flight of the ball didn't feel any different. And she was able to get separation quite a lot. So it just felt like forward craft rather than battling her opponent one-on-one in a different sense. Her ball use was terrific, getting out of D50. Her marking stood up. Even her pack marking as well. She was able to take a few really good contested pack marks and showed that she's capable defensively to stand up. It was hard because Sandy weren't really pushing inside 50, so it was hard to see those like pure defensive elements. So when you're under pressure, it was really a lot of ball comes in, she marks it, goes out, and she resets. So that was the hard part about analysing her game, but I still think that move was quite good. She probably will play there again against Calder this weekend, assuming that, they probably will do that game quite comfortably. And for Sandy Scout Howden, I just want to emphasise her work rate. She was exceptional.
In a word, is Emma McDonald still a forward at the next level?
Yeah, I don't I'd be so surprised if she. It's just, I think that was just for versatility. She just proved her point, but I still think she's a forward at the next level.
Some other games, Gippsland comfortably getting the job done against Murray. Ash Central was out. It was a Jazz out and breakout game in the midfield, 30 disposals and 4 goals. Really clinical from her. Ava Desch, really strong. And Lily Milner is a double bottom major. Really good kick of the footy, and she showed that on the weekend. Priya Bowering led Tassie to a comfortable win over Bendigo. Western were led by Sierra Greaves and Alex McBride Lone in a 45-point victory over GWV, and Dandenong got it done pretty comfortably against Geelong. Ali Simon's comeback from injury just continues to get better and better, and you watched a little bit of Northern's win over Calder. Isabella Hashongwa Gibb was one who impressed you, a bottom ager for the Knights in the ruck.
Yeah, and she'll be featuring in the 17's future game we'll touch on in the end, but she was awesome, and I loved her first half efforts. Her composure under pressure, she works really well as a ruck, but she's mobile. She's got that Jordan Doherty type where she can move around so well. Her hands were terrific on a pretty slippery deck. Wasn't really, you know, wasn't dry in any case, but she was awesome. Just the way she moved defensively was great to see. And Marlo Graham's the other one I just want to mention. Her aggressiveness is terrific. She doesn't let size impact her. She's one of the best midfielders in that Northern team for the way she attacks at every contest, the way she moves the ball inside 50, and her work rate was terrific, I think. Is that...
That's it, yeah. So
I'll run through Ludders.
Yeah, run through Ludders if you like.
But start with the boys. Sandy on top now with 40. So Calder's loss was pretty costly because they will not finish... they can finish first, but they need Sandy to lose to Oakley and they need to beat Western. Geelong on 40, Calder on 40, Tassie, Dandy, Gippy on 38. So only 2 points separate first and sixth, which is pretty good to see. Murray on 30, they can't move their position. Eastern on 24, Northern 22, Western 20, Rebels 20, they move up a spot. Bendigo on 16, Oakley on 12. Now, if every Metro team that is higher ranked on the ladder wins this week, so Sandy beat Oakley, Calder beat Western, Eastern beat Northern, we will see the same matchups 2 weeks in a row for wildcard week. That is terrible, let's just be honest, because it's matchups. It's not that fascinating. And it's also a mental edge where you feel like if you lose this week, what hope do you have the next week? Country, Geelong sit first. Tassie don't have they play one less game, so they do get screwed over a little bit because, Dandenong can leap them, but they don't have the opportunity to play that last game. Tassie, Dandy, Gippy, Murray, Rebels and Bendigo. For the girls, Oakley, Minor Premiers, Eastern, Northern, Sandy, Western, Calder and Metro. They've got wildcard this week. We'll do in tips at the end. Tassie, Gippy, Dandy, Geelong, Rebels, Bendigo, Murray. That top four has been set for a while for the country. But State League, just one talking point, and we'll just, given time, we'll just touch through the other performances. But Job Shanahan's the main talking point out of his VFL stint. He was awesome, wasn't he? I mean, another really massive performance. I guess they have played non-AFL affiliated teams. Not that that means
a lot,
but his opportunity against AFL listed players has been not as good as others that have played VFL. But he was still awesome, wasn't he? Like, in terms of his chances, he's just skyrocketed.
Yeah, to do that against senior bodies 3 weeks in a row is outstanding. And I think, you know, it was one thing you saw the first week and he didn't have a lot of the ball, but, you know, he capitalized on all opportunities. But he's done it 3 weeks in a row where he just takes the marks he needs to take, and he's clearly not overawed because he's making the most of his opportunities. So I guess the question to you, Nathan, is what does that do for his status in terms of the key forward ranks? I've been so high on him all year. I think when you combine productivity and potential, there's no key forward that sits above him. I can understand the argument that someone like a Jack Whitlock might sit above him if you look at potential only, just because Jack Whitlock's got a little bit more height, where Job Shanahan might be that second or third forward in your inside 50. But what does that game or that block of three games do for his performance? It was 5 goals he kicked on the weekend, by the way.
Yeah. Probably, what did he finish with? Probably about 11.
14 and 3.
Which is unbelievable. Looking at our top 10s, I just was interested where I put him. I put him at 2. I had Joe Berry at 1. I would have Job Shanahan above him. I think he's proved in every asset of the field he can do something new and something different, and that skill set combined, he's lethal wherever he is. He's hard to match up on in general because he can punish you further up the ground with his ground ball work, or he can move you back inside 50 and really punish you with his separation or his general one-on-one ability. So to do that against senior bodies as well, if you're going, if you, you know, he's going back to Bendigo this week, you would be a little bit nervous playing on him. He'll probably get Matt Whitlock if he goes down back, possibly. It depends what the matchups are there, but that'd be a real good test on Matt this weekend if that is the case. I think it shows that's a massive challenge. You can shut down him and limit. I think a good game against Job Shanahan is keeping him to 2 goals.
Literally, it's become that way. Yeah, no, definitely. And I think the other thing to touch on is we've seen some really strong performances, but it's one thing to do it as a flanker or something like that, but to do it as a key position player where he's standing up and taking big marks is absolutely, like, it's unbelievably difficult to do in your first go at senior bodies at VFL level. And I think to perform in that position is an absolute testament to him. Some others that played VFL on the weekend, Toby Trevallia really enhanced his stocks with his performance, showed his run and dash. Harvey Langford, showed a little bit as well playing for Richmond. The stats didn't show it. He was on managed minutes, though. Jade Newen had a performance that he probably would have liked to have had, and that was good to see. He kicked a goal for Essendon, but more so he had the 17 touches, was able to get really involved for them, which was really good. He's had an up-and-down sort of little period. Christian Moraes played for Box Hill. Luca Grego kicked a goal for Williamstown. And Lucas Impey, I mean, you talk about it being tough for Job Shanahan coming in and playing as a key forward. Lucas Impey is a ruck playing VFL. That's so tough to do on debut. And yeah, he won some hitouts and won some contested footy as well. But that wraps up the state league performance.
Under 17 girls futures list got announced last night when we're recording this, but it is set to be played on the 31st of August, which is next Saturday at GMHPA before I think Geelong and Melbourne's AFLW game. So I'll just run through the girls who made that list. We will watch this game and we'll cover it the week of when it happens. But Jordan Allen, Chloe Baker-West won't play, injured. Misha Barwin, Ava Bibby, Harriet Binley, Priya Bowring, Chloe Baum, Mizuki Brothwell and Nalu Brothwell. Good to see the sisters getting in. Rain Dodd, Marlo Graham, Phoebe Hargreaves, Isabella Hishonwa-Gibb, Stella Huxtable, Olivia Lacey, Alexandra McBride, Lone, Jade McClay, Taylor McMillan, Zara Newworth, and Alice Stoddart. Just a quick question, who are you most excited to see out of that list?
Zara Newworth, been really high on her for a long time as a key defender, and I think she's got a lot of upside.
Excited to see how Jade McClay fares against the top girls in the country. So, yeah, as we said, we will cover that game when it happens. Tips to finish the podcast for the boys. This is the final round before Wildcard, Geelong and Rebels.
GWV,
Geelong win, they get first and a week off, so it is a lot at stake in this game. Bendigo and Murray?
I've got about 7 tips wrong in the last 10 weeks because I've always tipped Bendigo.
Bendigo would be top 4 if your tips went the way.
Yeah, I'm going to tip Bendigo.
You've said
Murray.
Murray. Oh, see, they can win Bendigo because they get all that talent back and they're like...
A different
form
team.
Form isn't really... I can't. I've got to say Murray. Northern, Eastern?
Eastern.
Yeah, Easton, Gippy, Dandy.
Dandenong.
I do think Dandy, but Gippy is still good, especially, you know, going to play in Morwell. I guess that's not as far for Dandy. Oakley and Sandy.
Sandy.
Massive game. Excited to see how this goes. But, if Oakley couldn't beat Rebels, Sandy are that next level above. Yep. And I love Rebels. Yeah, I'd say Sandy and Calder Western to finish the round.
Western.
You reckon Western?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I know they were missing Grego and Impey, but like they did lose by 94, so that's a massive call. I'll say Calder. Girls, pretty similar. I think a lot of double headers. Gippy and Dandy.
Dandenong.
This will decide who finishes where, really, in their top four. The winner will not play. Will play Geelong in a quarterfinal. Bendigo Murray, last chance for
Bendigo.
Murray. I hope Murray win. Nothing against Bendigo, but it's the last opportunity. Hopefully they get up. Geelong and Rebels?
Geelong.
And now these are the 3 girls' wildcard games for Metro. So it's a triple header at Trevor Barker Oval. Northern and Sandy?
Northern.
So this is 3rd v. 4th. I'd say Northern. Eastern, Western?
Eastern.
Eastern, 2nd v. 5th. And then 1st v. last is Oakley and Calder.
Oakley,
so it'll be the 3 winners plus the highest ranked loser, which would be Sandy if our tips go that way. And then it would be Oakley, Sandy and Eastern Northern. So that about wraps it up for this week. Let us know if you enjoyed that format. We'll try and keep that going as long as we possibly can. And obviously the games are getting more and more important, but there'll also be fewer games as the season goes on. So a lot of big talking points. Thank you all for watching. Check out our socials for more, and we will see you in the next episode.